I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back, to the Indie Football Podcast, World Cup Daily in Russia, live from Moscow. It's not technically live, we're recording, but I'm Ed Mallion, as ever, sports editor of The Independent. This is day three of the World Cup proper, and I'm joined by two people today, to my right, as he has been for the last couple of days, is our Northern Football correspondent, Mark Critchley.
Hello, Ed.
How are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Well, as ever, I've been with you all day, so we know exactly how each other are. However, we have a special guest.
Why asking
me? Who I didn't even realise he was flying into Moscow today, but I am delighted to have sat alongside me none other than Chief Sports Writer Jonathan Liu.
Hi, how's it going?
Well, all the better for seeing you here. A late arrival to the World Cup, but nonetheless, you're here now until the World Cup final. How's it been? Have you been presumably watching at home, and what are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching the first couple of days on telly. Went to see Spain-Portugal in Flatiron Square in London Bridge last night. There was a massive queue, so we couldn't get in. It's been a really kind of entertaining tournament. We've not had a 0-0 yet. And it seems like a lot of, you know, most teams have come here to play, and we're already 8 games in, which feels ridiculous considering we only started a couple of days ago. But yeah, it's really hurtling by.
You were on a flight today, so you missed the first 2 games of the day.
Yeah.
The first of which was France against Australia. The second of which was Argentina Iceland, which you and I were at Critch, and probably where we should start because it's the biggest story of the day. Argentina won, Iceland won. Argentina going ahead through Sergio Aguero's goal, and then an equaliser from Alfred Finnbogason. Probably a deserved equaliser at the time. I thought it was kind of evenish first half. Second half, Argentina were the better side. Lionel Messi wins a. No, he didn't win the penalty. Maxi Meza won the penalty. Lionel Messi steps up to take it and has it saved by Hannes Halldórsson. And it ends up being a 1-1 draw, despite Argentina kind of throwing everything at Iceland at the end. An incredible atmosphere. Loads of visiting fans, Argentinians and Icelandic alike. More Argentinians, but a great atmosphere. Terrific game. Kind of what are your immediate thoughts on it, Critch?
I thought that all the kind of fears that we had about Argentina kind of came to pass. Still doesn't look like there's a coherent, cohesive system in place. Still looks like they concentrate, they rely too much on Messi. My own reading of the game was kind of affected by the fact that my whole piece was based around Messi's first 10 minutes, which I watched intently, fully concentrated on, and then tried to make sense of some notes that I'd made afterwards. But I mean, you know, even like in the second half, you say Argentina were the better side. I think they were just the more dominant side, and Iceland were perfectly comfortable with allowing them to do that. I was in the press conference afterwards, and the manager, who is a dentist, by the way, in case anyone hadn't heard about that yet. He was asked whether his players enjoy this kind of like test for 90 minutes, and he was like, you know what, yeah, I think they actually do, because this is what they train for, this is what they build the whole game around. And like, there wasn't, you know, Argentina were certainly the better side, and if one side was going to win it, it was going to be them. But you would never say that Iceland really looked particularly uncomfortable. Only really when Messi was standing over the spot kick did you think, okay, well, Argentina have won it now, I suppose. And it turned out they hadn't. So going forward, I mean, that really turns what we already had kind of had down as the group of death into a real challenge for Argentina.
It was an interesting one. I mean, they should have had a penalty. Christian Pavon, who came on for Di Maria and did more in a couple of minutes than Di Maria done in his whole time on the pitch, was fouled in the box and it wasn't given, inexplicably on a day where the video assisted refereeing was all over the place. You know, we saw a lot of it today.
I think I can make that explicable though, because I've been reading up on the VAR rules. As
okay,
as
right. So what I saw was Pavon does a little move, beats the man, like knocks the ball past the man.
Yeah.
The guy dangles a foot out, trips the winger, and the ball goes. It went out. The ref gives a goal kick. So the ref obviously doesn't think the defender's got a touch on it.
Mm.
So he has to think it's a dive, presumably. He doesn't punish a dive. But
with that, I mean, you can tackle someone.
Right, I agree with that. But the problem is that he did foul him. Yeah. You know, we watched it on replay, and I thought it was a foul at the time. I thought it was a foul at the time, and then we watched the replay, and it looks a foul there. So explain why that hasn't gone upstairs.
Well, it will have everything seen upstairs by the VAR officials. It's a game, like, we can't completely outrule subjectivity. So what happened basically was that a VAR official looked at that and thought there's no penalty there. So he doesn't refer it to the referee, and so the referee doesn't know. And so no review takes place. Now, I think it was a penalty. I think everybody agreed it was a penalty. But, like, the referee, the man who counts, didn't think it was. And now the new second man, who's in a referee's kit as well, somewhere in Moscow watching on a TV screen, didn't think it was one either. So that's how it's not given.
Okay. I mean, I don't want to dwell on it too much, because I don't think VAR was the big takeaway from this game.
No, not really.
Critch's piece on Messi that came from what we can only describe as a visual stalking of his movements today is very good. You should go.
Heuristic, almost.
Yes. No. If anything, slightly disturbing. You should go online and read that in the usual place, independent.co.uk/football. If you're feeling a bit weird and stalkery, but really good piece. The big thing for me, you know, Iceland. You're talking to the players afterwards. Actually, very humble people. They're Gylfi Sigurdsson said he thought they were lucky, really. Argentina had more than enough chances to win, and they just kept throwing their bodies in front of it and hoping to block it. You know, the most important body of those was Hannes Halldórsson, who, you know, and I like to think this might be a watershed moment, because he was the guy who was the film director, the guy who directed the Eurovision video in 2012 and did the Coca-Cola advert for this World Cup, I think someone said. But he's not that guy anymore. He's now the guy who saved the penalty from Lionel Messi in the World Cup. So we might be at the point where we can move on from the sort of twee day job sort of stuff with Iceland and be like, well, these guys are professional footballers who've done it on the biggest stage, you know, World Cup and European Championships now, where they held Portugal in that opening game 1-1, wasn't it? Same as result as today. And they knocked England out. So, you know, we know how incredible an achievement it is, just purely from the size of the country, and they've done a great job. And I just think they're almost still being patronised, where I think they're almost beyond that point now. And they are so good because they just focus on the things they're really good at. And Argentina didn't do that. And more specifically, Jorge Sampaoli, who I think what he has been successful at in the past, what he's been really good at, is he had a good system that got the best out of fairly average players and made them play better than they actually were. And he's compromised on the system that he always uses to try and get the best out of Messi. And he's not getting the best out of Messi, and he's not making the average players better. So, I mean, what do you do in that situation?
Well, it's disappointing, really. It's like, you know, we've seen Bielsa go to Leeds this week, and everybody expects him to play the Bielsa way. It'd be very, very disappointing if he suddenly went, you know, 4-4-2 with a big man up top. It's I didn't see the game, but having seen, you know, a little bit of them before the tournament, they're a flawed side. I liked your tweets about how their attack was kind of like their culture, in that it was really vibrant, and their defence was like their economy. It was prone to immediate collapse. That was quite funny.
A rare one, just the rare one hits.
Yeah, but
you know, it's
there's gold in them hills.
It's the defence was farcically, like, you know, that first 5 minutes when Marcus Rojo just gets beaten by a simple long ball, and then on the next kind of the next sequence of play, just passes the ball across the 6-yard box. Caballero screws it up, and Big could be honest and should have put ice on level at that point.
Well, they've been thrown into a goalkeeping crisis by not having Sergio Romero fit. I think, you know, that says a lot about...
It's damning. The three guys they've got with them are pretty much all the same level. But if you're going to try and dominate games, you need a keeper who can play the ball. And what they've done is they pick the guy who's probably the best overall goalkeeper in terms of, like, when you weigh everything up. But Caballero is a good shot stopper who's not that great with the ball at his feet.
What I will say is it is far, far too early to write them off. And being, you know, a flawed team as they are, this is a tournament full of them, in a way. Having not seen Germany or Brazil or indeed England play, just a little joke there. We haven't seen a great team yet this tournament. And so it's quite possible that Argentina, you can't ever write off a team with that sort of talent in it. And you can't ever write off a team that starts slowly because plenty of champions have done it in the past.
Yeah, and it was almost certain they were going to start slowly because they've had such, as I said, apart from Spain, they've had by far the worst tournament preparation. You know, the two friendlies they had, one was against Haiti, which was a swiftly rearranged one when they're supposed to play against Nicaragua, and the second one was the one that was cancelled in Israel. So they have not had the best preparation. They've lost a couple of players through injury, which is obviously a great shame, but They've got a long way to go, but I'm with you. I think starting slowly is actually probably to be expected, and you know, we know Iceland are good. We know Iceland are solid. Iceland will frustrate every team they play against, I think, just because they're very tough to break down.
The thing about Iceland is, I mean, I went out there a couple of years ago to do a feature. You know, the sort of features that you've probably read a dozen times over now. And one thing that's kind of struck me is that, for all Cristiano Ronaldo talked about their kind of small mentality, Icelanders are actually they're kind of cocky. There's an arrogance to them. And that's kind of what has allowed them to punch above their weight. I mean, it's not actually just football in which they have, they've won, I think, like ice hockey or fencing, or, you know, they've won like medals on
handball. They're good at handball.
They're good at handball. They're always kind of, they've got poets and artists and musicians, and they've, for such a small country, they don't get overawed by what should be a massive disparity in size and strength. So, you know, they're not going to get fazed by, you know, whether it's Ronaldo in the Euros, whether it's Messi here. They'll stand up to them.
Did you see the quotation in the Wall Street Journal from the manager?
About not having been in a war.
Yeah, they've only been in COD wars. They've never hurt anybody. You can't but lovers. And I just read that and I thought, God, I want you to lose 8-0.
Yeah.
There's a sort of knowingness there. They're not stupid. They know why we're all interested in them. They know why, like, all the Americans are kind of have this sort of tournament love in. They're quite cannily playing this sort of everybody's second team card and pulling it off quite well.
McGilfie said that afterwards. He said, you know, like, it's the media that talks about the coach being a dentist and the goalkeeper being a director and all this sort of stuff. It's not us. You know, we know each other. You know, like, Birkir Bjarnason, who the most Viking looking man of all time, said that now is not the time to speak too much because teams get eliminated with 1 point, and it's true. You know, they don't want to get too far. Croatia and Nigeria are both decent teams, and they're both, I mean, this is a very difficult group. It's going to be really interesting to see how it shakes out, but Iceland have got a chance of progression, obviously. Now Argentina, I think, are still, as I say, I've got faith that they will come good, but he's going to need to make some changes to that team. And I think Pavano's actually got to be in the mix to start. I think Banega has to play ahead of Biglia based on what we saw today. And I wonder, I doubt he will switch the keeper, but Franco Armani might be better than Caballero going forward. So we'll see what they do there. Anything else to say on that game before we move on? I think France, probably the next game to talk about.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found.
LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So you missed this completely, Johnny. You were somewhere over the Netherlands probably at that point.
Yeah, hoping I didn't get shot down by a revenge Ukrainian missile. We can't put that in, can we? Don't
you? Yeah, we could. We can cut that out. It's a lot of work to edit that out, so we'll just take the risk. I was with you, Critch. We were watching that game, and the VAR thing was the big thing, I guess. So Griezmann goes down. It's 0-0. Australia have kind of frustrated France a bit, and your initial thought was?
My initial thought, seeing it live?
Seeing it live,
I suppose you're never really sure when you see it live nowadays because we've learned to kind of trust the replays, haven't we? But I didn't think it was a penalty seeing it live. I think several replays later, especially on the follow-through, I don't think you can really argue with it.
Yeah, and I thought it looked a pen live, but then you have the doubt when you're looking at the replays, and I kind of talked myself out of it.
Yeah,
we were talking to people in the media center there, and there was a bit of confusion because it was the first decision I've seen where it really goes back, and because play had continued, that was the thing. Play had continued, and then the guys in the booth are reviewing it. Referee gives a penalty. Griezmann steps up, smashes it home, 1-0. But then Australia win a penalty, which was just bizarre.
Yes, Samuel Umtiti trying to like slam dunk the ball, not quite even catching it. That's the one you're referring to. That is the only penalty.
And he's been laughing about it since. But he wouldn't be laughing if they'd drawn that game 1-1 because it was so stupid. And Australia didn't really pose much of a threat outside that penalty, and then like the last 5 minutes where they kind of got near the penalty area of France. Mile Jednak, wonderful colossus of a man, smashed that home. And then another weird goal line technology this time coming in, Paul Pogba's deflected strike going in to make it 2-1. But rather than just kind of commentating on the random stuff that happened, what do you actually make of France? Because once again, I thought they were pretty kind of stale.
Yeah, I think stale's a good word to describe it, actually. We said yesterday, didn't we, that we had doubts about Deschamps, and even though there's so much quality throughout the squad, that doesn't really count if your manager doesn't set you up in the correct way. When it was 1-1, and when they were looking like they might drop 2 points, his first kind of reaction was to throw Olivier Giroud on, and I think there's almost nothing wrong with that because of how well Olivier Giroud's done for France, but it says everything that he's their plan B and that Deschamps doesn't have any real other ideas of how to get out of a result like that. Ultimately, I think we have to pay some credit to Paul Pogba, because I actually thought today, first half as well, like he had that kind of impact on a game where, you know, all France's best play was going through him, and it's not always obvious and it's not always explicit, but when it isn't, people tend to criticise him and tend to, you know, pick holes in his performance. But then today, I mean, he's come up with the goal in the end, and, you know, although there was only a few inches in it, he's won them the game, and I think he deserves a little bit of credit as well. But again, like, we can turn that back to Deschamps and say he's having to rely on a star player to put in a good performance every now and again to dig him out of a hole.
Well, as Miguel likes to say, sometimes a few inches is enough. I think the France team today were very stale. I think we've got Pogba possible in terms of, I just trusted him more today. I trusted him, and sometimes you can't trust him in that team. I thought Deschamps' substitutions were as clueless as he is as a coach. I think he is just a disaster. like just throwing on kind of, it's almost like he looks at the bench and just like who's smiling the most and just tosses them on there. It's just absolute just lottery.
It would be absolutely criminal if Deschamps doesn't get this France team at least to the last four and probably the final. Look, if I mean to squander the amount of talent that they've got, which you know, there's every possibility that Deschamps will do, because I think we're all agreed he's a pretty limited manager. I don't know. It's just there's something that seems so kind of out of kilter about it, that you've got this. It's kind of like having, you know, like Jimmy Page and Keith Moon and Flea in like this super band, and you've got like Dane Bowers on vocals. It just something.
You're out of your mind. Yeah, I'm glad someone got that reference. I'm glad someone got that reference.
No, I got the reference. I was just kind of dumbfounded, momentarily stunned into silence, which is rare.
Sorry, it was bugging me.
Oh God!
You didn't think anyone would have this many Dane Bowers references, but they're just there.
But you've gone to another level.
God, all the foreign listeners are not going to know what the hell's going on. Bad day for Australia. Lost at the rugby, lost at the cricket, lost at the football. Cry me a river on that one. They are going to be bottom of that group. But having watched Peru-Denmark, you know, it's going to be an interesting little battle to see which two teams go through. Denmark did ultimately win that game 1-0. We caught that, right?
Yeah. And I love Peru.
Everyone loves Peru.
I just put it on record. We've got a recording device here. I love Peru. hook it up to my veins. Mainline it into my eyeballs. I am now. I'm now in the market for Peru, Peruvian, and all Peru branded products. Please inquire within.
Great country, great people, and they've travelled here in enormous numbers. Their first World Cup in 36 years. Like you know, you've probably heard all the stories about. The World Cup sticker albums that Panini greatly underestimated the demand in Peru, and there were kind of riots when shops were selling out. One of the Peruvians, Daniel Aquino, bought a Panini album and didn't find his face in there, and immediately rang coach Ricardo Gareca to ask why he'd been dropped. It turns out they've only got space for 18 for each country. Really, like brilliant country, brilliant story. Like even the Paulo Guerrero thing, where the tested positive for cocaine. I managed to convince the authorities via the Court of Arbitration for Sport that it was some sort of contaminated tea product. Means that he's at the World Cup and he's been fighting hard for Peru for 14 years or so, and he gets to go to the World Cup. I didn't get a start today, which is a shame, because I think he would have actually given them a bit extra. But they had a load of chances against Denmark, who were a little bit suspect at the back, but ultimately scored. It was a nice finish from Yusuf Poulsen, great ball from Christian Eriksen.
Lovely finish, I thought, but really just Peru's wastefulness stood out more than anything else. How that game wasn't drawn in the end, and you worry whether that's going to cost them later on. Again, like in that group, you would fancy France and Denmark to go through. So, but have we heard the best Peru story of the weekend?
Well, if I haven't just said it, then no.
Well, okay. So, did you hear about the fan that tried to put on 24 kilograms of weight in order to qualify for one of the easy items?
Yes. Stuart James's story in The Guardian. Yeah. Excellent. I mean, brilliant. Fair play to him. There's a lot of commitment to the cause.
Hang on. So, why did he put on 24?
Because he was worried he wouldn't get a ticket, essentially.
It's to do with the disabled restricted access seats, basically. You have to be a certain weight to qualify, to be like kind of registered disabled or whatever, I guess. And he had to put on 24 kilos is a lot of weight.
It's the Homer Simpson episode.
It's the Homer Simpson episode. It's where you have to wipe something on a napkin, and if it goes transparent, that's the window to weight gain. Peru, yeah, they brought loads of numbers here, and yeah, they always felt like they could be the neutrals team, and I think just watching them once, the way they played, it was that kind of joyous, like, my God, we're at the bloody World Cup, and we're going to go for it sort of thing. Christian Cuervo was great. Unfortunately, that penalty was not so great.
I mean, it's some of the best football that I've seen from anybody at this World Cup so far. I was reminded of, you know, Costa Rica 4 years ago, and... you know, and Chile as well, I guess, a little bit. Just the way they came at you. And I guess if you're a neutral, if you don't watch a huge amount of international football,
if like the World Cup every 4 years is your thing, you'll watch that Peru side and think, why can't everybody play like that? And of course, you know, we know that the reason is that you need to be incredibly well drilled. They're an incredibly tight unit. They've had a very settled side for, you know, the last 24, 48 months. I don't know, producing that sort of free-flowing, kind of intuitive football is not easy. And, you know, it was a joy to watch. Unfortunately, yes, they missed a penalty and they lost. But that's kind of an unhappy footnote to the...
Well, yeah, you know, and sometimes nice guys finish last, and that might be the case with Peru. But I think they've got a chance, because if they beat Australia, I think they could take something off France. I like to believe that they could take something off France. And I also think other people will take something off France. So, you know, if Australia become the group whipping boys, then it might suit Peru. So fingers crossed. I don't know, it is difficult. The maths are difficult because Denmark have got that 3 points. And if Denmark beat Australia, they're pretty much through, aren't they? But I don't know, we'll see. Anything else you'd like to add on the Danes? It wasn't as convincing a performance as that. If you had them down as your dark horses, you're not necessarily enjoying that so much.
I've got nothing to say about Denmark.
Critch?
Everything's going to go through Christian Eriksen, isn't it?
I mean, that is literally... You could have said that without watching the game.
Well, I almost didn't watch the game. In fact, I caught the last 10 minutes.
Okay. In that case, I'll let you off. That's going to be an interesting group. We will talk about Croatia and Nigeria in a little bit. Just wanted to look ahead to tomorrow's games, which are... There are some other quite interesting ones. I think the most interesting for a lot of people will be the late game, which is Brazil kicking off their campaign.
Right. So have you got the latest media update from FIFA?
I haven't, but right. Tell me about it.
So they've listed tomorrow's games. Brazil is game 9, even though it's the last game, and the other two are games 10 and 11. Where's the logic there?
One of those questions. I mean, especially disappointing from the Swiss, to be honest. You know, you'd expect better from them. But, you know, on a more, say, footballing note, what do we expect out of Brazil?
We would like to see the Brazil that everybody says this Brazil side can be. We don't want, you know, we're not necessarily going to see the finished article. You want to see them click. You want to see a few sparks. You want to see a sense that, you know, they know what to do. They know what they're doing here, which... 4 years ago, when they completely lost the plot, and even though, you know, they did keep winning, there was a sort of a collective mania that just seemed to set in like damp.
Do you not want to see them lose the plot and that collective mania again?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. Actually, is it? I mean, do we?
Yeah, I think it would be interesting. But what I most would like to see is I'd like to see a good team with a statement performance at some point. A good team just come in and, like, you know, really sweep another team aside.
Yeah, but England play on Monday, so...
I mean, many people, I'm sure, would argue that Russia have already done that with their thumping win. But I think this Brazil team are very good. I've said that multiple times. I think they're probably going to win it in the end. But there's also a chance... I know Germany haven't got an easy game against Mexico tomorrow. That's what the game that you and I are going to be at, Krich, at the Luzhniki. Because Mexico are the great underachievers of world football. They are a nation that is obsessed by football. They've got a huge population. They've got a strong domestic league. They've got loads of money. They're slightly weakened, I think, by the slight insularity and the fact that, you know, they haven't got good nations to play against at club level in terms of the CONCACAF Champions League is terrible.
Haven't they like made the last 16 something ridiculous, like 7 or 8 times in a row?
But never go beyond
that. But they've never got beyond that, yeah. So... I'd like to see Mexico do something good, but I also think there's this little kind of bug inside my mind that says Mexico are going to be a little bit exciting and a little bit explosive, and then Germany just going to pick them off and win 4-0.
Yeah, I think I kind of fear for Mexico a little bit in the group, because my dark horses for the tournament, or at least for, it sounds daft saying the tournament, but with Sweden, who are in the same group as them. Because Sweden are quite, they play on Monday against South Korea, but they're quite disciplined, well drilled, and like we keep repeating the line, that's what it takes in this tournament. And I I just don't see that from the Mexico team.
What do you like about Sweden particularly? I mean, I saw you put Ludwig Augustinsson in your fantasy team.
Yes, but you saw what influenced my decision.
Fair enough. But Sweden are, I think, you know, without Zlatan, they've some people have said been a little bit better. It's kind of the what Bill Simmons in basketball calls the Ewing theory, where you take away the most important player and the biggest piece, and kind of all the other players raise their level because they feel they have to make up for the difference there. But Sweden may not have the obvious stars, but they're well coached. They should beat South Korea. So then it's pretty much Sweden-Mexico for second in that group, you'd say.
Yeah, I would say so. And like I said, I think Sweden are going to get it. I think what impressed me most was actually their playoffs against Italy, who I didn't think Italy were... They had a very poor manager, but I don't think they were a particularly poor side, and they kind of got unlucky with the qualification draw being in Spain's group. But Sweden really just kind of controlled those two legs. And like I say, that's the kind of disciplined, well-drilled performance that's going to take you far in this competition. Thing is, if they finish second, I think I'm right in saying they'll play first in Group E, and that's probably going to be Brazil, and that's everyone's favourite, so... you know, not much chance of progressing there.
Brazil v Sweden, 1952 World Cup final?
58.
5-2? 5-2. So that was Pelé's first World Cup at 17 years old. Brazil, Sweden, yeah, would be interesting. I think Brazil should mow through that group. But our predictions have been so bad this tournament so far that you almost kind of want to go against it.
I mean, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Germany walk that group. I mean, if they get a slow start, which you know is entirely possible, their entire game is essentially based on kind of using their like 17 attacking midfielders to try and, you know, drag teams out of position. And you, if the Mexican team is anything like the Mexican teams that we've come to know over the years, they're generally pretty well organised, and. They're in a group that, you know, Sweden as well, very well organised. They're in a group that they're not necessarily going to breeze through. You're not going to get sort of 4-1s and 5-0s, and it's not going to be like a knockabout group, I don't think.
Germany, you're talking about?
Yeah.
Germany, South Korea. Germany, South Korea. I could see them putting a few past South Korea. I watched one South Korea friendly. I was trying to prepare on teams. I really was desperately trying to watch friendly games before, and it's really hard to try and fit them in. But I did watch South Korea, and I just didn't think they were that good. There's a penalty.
We did Croatia.
A little spoiler. We are watching Croatia Nigeria in the background, just because Johnny needs to go to bed basically because he's tired, and he only arrived recently. So Croatia 1-0 up, and it looks like they could go 2-0 up here with a penalty. Mario Mandzukic, his header was that was an own goal, wasn't it? The first goal.
Yeah, it was.
Let's be honest.
Down was an own goal.
Oh, he's given a lovely hug there.
Yeah, but it's a penalty, right? Because both arms were over him, and Mandzukic can't do anything. Can't even jump.
Isn't it funny that the people listening to this will know if this penalty's been scored or not, and we don't?
Again, it's time travel. It's time travel. It's amazing to think that we are bending the space time continuum in every podcast we do. But Croatia haven't been that great though. What have you thought of Croatia so far? You know, we've been watching on and off.
I think they've been fairly comfortable, actually. I mean, they've not had a huge amount of the ball, but I don't think, I mean, Nigeria haven't really looked that threatening.
They might be the best supported European side I've seen so far, Croatia, in terms of travelling fans. I know it's easier to get to Kaliningrad than it is to get to mainland Russia and beyond, especially if you're going to like Yekaterinburg or wherever. But it has been a sort of theme. I'm probably going to write about this later in the week, I think, that so many Europeans have snubbed this competition, but the South Americans have come over in tens of hundreds of thousands, possibly.
Well, that's certainly been the case out on the streets in Moscow so far. It's like we keep saying, it's my first World Cup, so I don't quite know how the demographics usually shift and shape. But that does seem to be... It seems to be Latin Americans in the majority.
Oh, he scored.
Luka Modric scored, as you already know.
But so, you know, just as well, it was on the pitch, because if it was next? In the court, you wouldn't remember.
What happens next, listeners? Tell us. Like, somehow.
Mailbag next week.
Send us your tweets now. So yeah, 2-0 Croatia, and they're going to take control of this group. In fact, so Croatia play Argentina next. Nigeria play Iceland. So Iceland Nigeria now kind of a spicy one, because both of those teams will believe that, you know, they have to win that game if they're going to have a chance of going through, because Iceland don't want to go into Croatia for the final game and have to win.
No, I agree, but also Iceland and Nigeria are probably the two most defensive teams in the group, the ones that rest on, you know, keeping a solid backline. So to come out and play is going to be difficult. Yes, we don't even know if Nigeria have lost this game yet, though. This is the problem.
We are obviously assuming, but there's 18 minutes remaining.
And we've got to keep this podcast going for 18 minutes in order for any of this to be relevant.
No, because what we can do is we can
pause it.
We can finish the podcast, and if the comeback happens, then we go back and just re-record this, and nobody will ever know. Or we tack it on the end and talk about the amazing Nigeria comeback. Like, it's not a difficult process.
It's tantalising peek behind the magician's curtain here.
Yeah, but you know,
we've used that phrase in every single.
I think we peek behind the curtain has been a daily occurrence.
Moratorium on
it. It's like a suburban neighbourhood, isn't it? Yeah. Lots of curtain twitching.
Anyway, there's one game we haven't done.
One game tomorrow. What's the one?
Costa Rica Serbia.
Costa Rica Serbia might be the worst game of the first round of games.
As somebody who's seen Costa Rica play recently, I'm quite confident that it might be the worst game of the first round of group stage games, given the fact that Russia, Saudi Arabia actually had 5 goals in it and wasn't too bad. Costa Rica really against England the other week, I mean, it was, I hate to echo all these people who are like, how did the USA not get in the tournament? But I mean, really, from that, they were a shadow of the 2014 team. So yeah, we're covering that one off the television tomorrow, aren't we? Or should I not say that on air?
No. I mean, like, the fact is, you know, no newspaper. I was talking to a sports editor of another newspaper the other day, and he was, I mean, they're covering far fewer games than we are. I think if anything, we've done too much. We've blanketed. But you can't cover every game.
If anything, you schedule that too well.
Yeah. If anything, that spreadsheet's too full. But no, Costa Rica Serbia is one that you're just going to have to watch and hope it happens to be one of those weird games where it's an absolute thriller, because Costa Rica, you know, they were very surprising 4 years ago, but you know, most of that was built on a solid defence and stuff. Serbia, interesting side. I want to see Milinkovic Savic. I watched that Lazio Inter game at the end of the season. I'm now slightly obsessed with him. And if he has a big World Cup, I think he might be that sort of the James Rodriguez guy who gets bought for a shed load of money by someone who, you know, they just have to have him. He's young. When you watch him play, he just looks like he's got absolutely everything in his toolbox. So that's about the only reason I'm looking forward to seeing Serbia-Costa Rica. Otherwise, it is two quite good games on Sunday. And then Monday is England Day. You're flying down to Volgograd tomorrow to talk to Gareth Southgate. Mm-hmm. What are your vague thoughts on England at this juncture?
I'm a little bit more optimistic about them now than I was at the start of the tournament. I can't remember whether... Did you talk about like the predictions? I predicted them second round before the tournament. And I think we've seen enough patchy quality in this tournament so far to suggest that if they can kind of get their mental game together, if they can, you know, just somehow blunder their way through the group, it might not be that bad for them.
My thing is that they're between the kind of 8th and 12th best team here. So, you know, and basically some things go against you. You know, it's a small sample size. You can play 3 or 4 games. So, I think quarterfinals will be like, it'll be good. It'll be okay. That'll be good. Mm. That will. Going out of the round of 16 is a slight underachievement, and getting to the semis is a big overachievement, probably. Yeah.
And actually, I mean, I'm going to, a draw against Tunisia is actually not the worst result. It will be portrayed as the worst result, which is why actually they can't draw. But they are not a bad side at all, Tunisia, and they've had a lot of pace. And if England get overconfident or just a little bit sloppy or a little bit Iceland, Tunisia will happen.
My thing is, I've said this before, I just like the way that Southgate is, I think he's really thought about how he wanted to build this team for a tournament, and he's built a system where they can basically make one tweak to change it from a proactive team against someone like Tunisia to like a reactive team against probably Belgium and whoever they play in the second round, be that Colombia or Senegal or whoever.
Like a reversible jacket.
Yes, no, but exactly that. Or what all the volunteers have here, which is zip-off trousers. They zip-off into shorts. Something like that. You know, it's versatile, and you can change things around easily. And I can't remember a previous tournament, really, where England managers have changed formations. I mean, apart from the most famous one, Italia 90. Except when you're kind of failing to win with 10 minutes to go, and then you just chuck it up to Crouchy.
Yeah, I think on England... I think Southgate's built up so much goodwill that it's hard to see how this really is a failure. I suppose going out of the group stage and perhaps losing those first two games would definitely put his job on the line. But otherwise, it seems like, you know, there's a lot of confidence in him. Reports yesterday that the FA want him to stay for a decade, and that's why they want him to do well at this tournament. Me personally, I think, like Johnny said, they draw that game against Tunisia. The first two games are really going to set the tone for the tournament, or at least set the narrative, you know. And it sounds an obvious thing to say, but like, say they draw those, and then say they draw and kind of narrowly win one and scrape through with a draw against Belgium, for example. That's really going to, people, you know, we all know how the mood changes in England during a World Cup or an international tournament like that, and I think that could suck some of the goodwill away. But I just don't see how, you know, there is a genuine good feeling around the England camp at the minute, I think, and Southgate has generated that goodwill, and I think he's safe and a safe pair of hands, and that's why the FA want him to do well.
You don't need much luck to just if they could win 2 or 3-0 that first game, I think suddenly everyone around that camp is going to be really positive. I think it'll be one of the more convincing wins of the group stage so far, I guess. So it's going to be really interesting to see, but I guess we'll have to do the proper England preview tomorrow. We'll get Jack Brook on the phone. We'll talk to Miguel after Brazil if he's keen for a chat. But otherwise, pending Nigeria pulling off the great comeback of all time, I think that's probably all we're going to talk about tonight.
Actually, I have a.
Oh, go on.
A friend of mine just sent me a message, and it was said. Basically, it's an opinion that he wanted to kind of wanted me to pick over. Spain's centre backs are shit.
Okay, so let's discuss that.
We'd have to discuss it for long, but you know, his kind of line of thinking was that Ramos has had a, you know, he's been in the news, but he's kind of, you know, not quite as good as everybody says he is, and Piqué's sort of on the slide, and you know, not my words. So.
I would accept Spain's centre-backs aren't as good as they used to be, perhaps, as an answer. I think that, I mean, they're one of the best centre-back pairings probably at the World Cup, still. Mm. What would you say, top five, top three? Mm. I'm all for saying Godin and Jimenez are the best. The way they played the other day, and just the fact that they played together at club level, I think, makes them much greater than just the individual players they are. Obviously, Piqué and Ramos have played together for years, but what does he say? Ramos was always a bit ropey, and Piqué's massively on the slide. That's exactly what he said. Not really buying that, but that comes from an Italian as well, and they're just probably a little bit bitter at not being at the World Cup. Any other random controversial opinions you got today?
If you're packing Kiehl's face wash in your luggage, make sure you screw the cap on. Don't just put the lid. Make sure you actually screw it tight. Otherwise, it will go all over your toiletry bag, and you'll lose about £15 worth of face wash.
So yeah, Johnny unfortunately had a face wash disaster. A small piece of, again, from Culture Corner. You had a fascinating dispatch on sparkling water yesterday. Today, the Moscow Metro map, it may tell you that you're connecting from one station to the other, but it what it can mean is you have to get out and walk 15 minutes down a dual carriageway to find the station that you're supposedly connecting with. So be careful out there, because you know, you might have a slightly longer journey than you expect, and you might get there late and a little bit sweaty. So on that note, we'll leave you. Thank you to Johnny for coming to Moscow purely for the podcast. When I mean, you're not going to be back in Moscow until the
second semi-final.
Until the second semi-final,
which is actually not that long away. If you think about it, it's about three weeks.
About 3 weeks.
We'll all have lived and died several deaths by then.
I will be back in England by that point. Critch, me and you, Johnny, Mexico tomorrow. But we'll dial up Johnny and Jack after the England game, after England and Tunisia. You two can have a little chat, and I'll edit that in with my new skills. So thank you again for joining us. As ever, all the great stuff on the website is, you know, lots of people are reading it, which is really great. But you know, don't get complacent. Keep reading it. Keep sharing it with your friends. If you've been enjoying the podcast, please make sure you tell people about it. And as ever, if you can rate and review it, that also helps us find other people via the power of algorithms. So until tomorrow, spasibo, which is the Russian word for thank you, and I don't know the word for goodbye, so I'm just going to say svidaniya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.